Do you wish healthy didn't have to be hard? What if there was another way? Well, there is. And it's the Jade Walkaway, where healthy is delicious, easy and exciting, and doesn't have to mean saying no to chocolate and red wine. Welcome back, everybody. You're here with your qualified naturopath, Jade Walker, and today's show is going deep and it's going to be honest, and I really hope that it can inspire and motivate you guys, because that is my biggest mission in life. So to be honest, this episode, I'm feeling a little bit nervous. It's something I've been sitting on for several months, and if I'm being entirely honest, it's probably something I've been sitting on for several years before this podcast was even born. You know, I always had ideas in my mind that I would love to one day do a podcast on my story, on my journey to endometriosis. But do you know what? That story was actually not finished, and I couldn't yet tell it. And to be honest, it's still not finished. It never will be. But the most important part of that story was actually getting a diagnosis when I'd suspected endometriosis for a really long time. And now I finally have that diagnosis. So anyone that follows me on Instagram will know, will be all across this story. I have shared every little detail, from my symptoms to when I got that official diagnosis, and of course my recent laparoscopy. So in this episode, I want to go back to the beginning, from basically when I first got my period to the symptoms that I experienced, the setbacks, the doctors telling me that everything was fine, the tests, everything you can imagine that kept telling me that everything looks fine, there's nothing wrong, when in reality I knew that that was far from the truth. And unfortunately, this is a really common story for so many women. They say that at least 10% or 1 in 10 women have endometriosis. This is a staggering figure. You will know someone with endo, or you will have it. You may not even know that you have endometriosis. So I just feel it is my duty to share this story with the world, and I am so excited that I am going to finally share this with you. But first of all, every interview that I do on this podcast always starts out in the same way, and I ask them these same questions, and I figured, you know what? I'm going to share with you my answers to those questions today. So usually I ask everyone, because I'm all about balance, I'm all about showing people that even as health practitioners, we all have our little indulgences. We are only human. So my favorite indulgence and healthy thing, or food, to be honest, I actually couldn't pick just one. I cheated a little bit, so I'm going to share with you a couple. But first of all, my favorite indulgence when it comes to food would probably have to be dumplings, so Chinese dumplings. I particularly love the vegetarian dumplings. There was this one place in South Yarra that when my husband and I first moved there that we used to get all the time, and they were like something like 15 dumplings for $10 or something ridiculous, and they were just so good. And I also love Indian food. Like if I'm going to go all out, I would be getting, you know, palak paneer is probably my favorite, which is this spinach dish with paneer, this ricotta cheese. Now that I avoid dairy, unfortunately, I don't get that as much anymore, but you can get a chicken version of it with the same spinach sauce. Or who doesn't love a beautifully deep, rich, smoky, sweet, creamy butter chicken? And of course, the best garlic naan and fluffy rice. I even go out all out with raita and chutney and pickles. Indian's probably one of my favorite foods, and in fact it's actually the food that first got me into cooking. I'll never forget when I was a cadet journalist, and there was this book man that used to come around, and there used to be a lot of recipe books in there, and there was this one recipe book that it was called The Best Ever Indian Cookbook. I've still got it today, still use it today. It is amazing. And that is what first inspired me to really get into cooking, because I had to go out and get all the spices. And my mum would often go on trips to Adelaide. This was back when I was living in Whyalla in South Australia. And she would go to the markets and she'd come back with all these bulk spices, because I was just churning through spices like you couldn't believe. Like those, I always laugh, those pissy little spice jars, you know, the Master Food ones from Coles and Woolies. that would probably make one dish for me. So you can see why I have to go to the Indian grocers and actually buy spices in bulk, which I absolutely love. And then in terms of my favorite indulgent thing to do, to be honest, would probably be sleeping in. I've always been someone who loves sleeping in. My mum and dad will tell you that. They always had to try and get me up in the morning. And I've also been a night owl. So obviously this I'm trying to work on as I try and do the whole adulting thing, but that is definitely still hands down my favorite thing to do guilt-free. And you know what? I don't really give a shit what anyone else says. So then when it comes to my healthy thing to do, I mean, look, being a naturopath, that is a bloody hard question to answer. But when it comes to food, I would probably have to say rice paper rolls without the rice noodles, just like packing it with lots of vegetables, fresh herbs, maybe a little bit of peanut butter or nut butter. And personally, I actually really love making my own marinated tofu, or even tempeh goes really well in them as well. That is something I've been doing for such a long time, and it's something I teach other people to do, and it's delicious. You can pack, like, it's basically like a salad wrapped in a thin piece of rice paper, which I just think is so clever, whoever came up with that. And then I'd probably also have to say, when it comes naturopathically speaking, I would probably say herbal medicines. As you know, I do have my herbal tea range. I think herbal teas is just one of the best health hacks that you can do, because it's enjoyable, it can taste good, and it also has a lot of healthy benefits. And then when it comes to my favorite healthy thing to do, I would probably have to say, I mean, look, I haven't been doing this a lot lately, but I did really love yoga when I was, you know, getting really good at it. It's something that I will get back into shortly, because I am going to be starting at a new clinic very soon in Geelong at the Geelong Wellbeing Centre. That's my first day there, will be on the 11th of March on a Wednesday. I'm pretty sure that's the right day. And they also have a little yoga and meditation space there as well. So I am so excited, because that's going to help me get back into the flow of that. And of course, you know, with that, one of my favorite healthy things to do would definitely be meditation. And I have also ran meditations before, and that's something I will be looking at doing at the Wellbeing Center, which is very exciting too. And probably finally would be gardening. Gardening is something that I've become more invested in the last year, since my husband and I bought our own house and actually have space where we can dig holes into whatever we want. And my mum and dad have a really big green thumb. Their backyard, their fruit and veggie patch is amazing. And it's probably the first thing I do every time I do get to go back home to Whyalla, is go straight to their backyard and see what's growing. You know, it's not just your general tomatoes, although yes, they have plenty of those, and, you know, parsley and all those things. They also look at, they've got like mulberries and you know, all these different types of herbs and lettuces and kale, and they even have a pomegranate tree. I love it so much. It's just so good, and that's what I aspire to do one day. At the moment, I am definitely getting better. I've got, I just got myself a mandarin tree for my birthday. I've got several herbs now. I've got even growing, I'm growing some potatoes, some raspberries, strawberries, bok choy, lavender, all sorts of different things. So I love that. And I think, you know, it really is about getting back to nature. And that is one of the first principles of naturopathic medicine, is the healing power of nature. And that doesn't have to mean herbal medicines or natural medicines. It's about getting outside and doing all those free things that we evolved to do, to be outside, to be exposed to the sun, to get vitamin D, to get that fresh air in, you know, unpolluted air, getting your feet on the ground and getting your hands in the dirt, and even picking up the microbes under your nails. And then naturally you're going to be translocating that bacteria into your gut, which can help stimulate your immune system. There are just so many benefits. I mean, even my husband and I were at the beach yesterday down at Ocean Grove, and look, it was a bit overcast. It was actually quite cold, but I've been getting back into Wim Hof lately, which is something I've talked about in another podcast. If you want to hear more about that, in the podcast I did with Dani Aravietz on her multiple sclerosis, and she uses the Wim Hof method to manage her MS. So I really wanted to embrace that yesterday. And even though it was cold initially, I was using the breathing techniques, and it's so invigorating once you get in the water. But not only that, swimming in the ocean helps to remineralize your body, and you can take in these minerals from the sea. But even on top of that, it's just the mental stimulus, this beautiful sensation of just, it's kind of like, for lack of a better term, it's kind of like the sea is washing away all your stresses. And I am a girl that grew up going to the beach a lot with my family. We have a holiday house in Venus Bay on the west coast of South Australia, and going fishing out in the boat. And so for me, and being an Aquarius, I mean, I don't know much about astrology or anything like that, but if there's one thing that's true, being Aquarius and loving the water absolutely makes sense to me. So now that I have rambled on for 10 minutes about what my favorite indulgence and healthy things to do is, I cannot wait to finally get into the crux of this podcast, and that is about my journey to an endometriosis diagnosis. So the reason why I've sat on this for a while now, even since I have been able to do this episode, is because I was a bit overwhelmed on where to start, to be honest. I just knew that I had so much to say, and I didn't really know where to start. And I wanted to make sure that I really justified, or I really gave value to what I wanted to say, and also make sure that I get every single point across. So I ended up sitting down today and actually writing it out first, writing out some points to make sure that I don't miss anything. So if you hear some pages turning, that is because I'm just going through my notes of what I've written. And here we go, basically. So I said to you earlier that I want to go back to the start of when I got my period. And even though that may not be that significant to you, I want to explain, now being a naturopath, the significance of timing and when you get your period and what that can mean as well. So this isn't just going to be about my journey. It's also about my reflective analysis on what I know now and what that could mean, and also to hopefully help you make sense of your own experience as well, or if you can help someone else out. So I was 11 years old when I first got my period. So for some of you, that might be a bit of a shock, because, you know, for a lot of women, it's usually around 14, 15, although we do know for sure that periods are coming on earlier and earlier now. So just straight off the bat, we know that early periods are linked with specific conditions such as endo and PCOS, and are also particularly driven by estrogen. So if you have had an early period and you do get a lot of symptoms, I would absolutely be looking at the potential for you to be having high estrogen. And also there are some genetic markers that can be looked at that are also linked in with this. So yeah, you can imagine being 11, getting your period, that's pretty big deal. But there were a couple of other girls that had it as well, so I didn't completely feel alone. My period regulated out pretty quickly. I don't particularly remember whether they were super heavy or not. I know I have a lot of women who've had heavy periods, you know, since they can remember. But with that said, I never really had anything else to compare it to. I didn't know whether mine were normal or not. I certainly do have memories of tampons soaking right through and then onto my underwear. And so I do wonder if I probably did have heavier than usual periods. So pretty much straight away, I started to get bad period pain. And to be honest, even before I got my period, I remember having these cramps that I'm pretty sure even my mum said, you know, that could be like the early signs of that you're going to get your period. And I just remember that being, you know, doubling over feeling, that lower cramping feeling. And I'd have to go and just sit on the toilet and just ride it out, particularly if I was at school. So the first thing I did obviously was go to the GP for
the period pain, and they prescribed me Ponstan. So Ponstan is a classic anti-inflam that is used for period pain. It's quite effective when used correctly. And I was on that for quite some time. I did find, though, that I had to take it before the pain came on. And I, you know, there were times when I would take it and I'd still have pain. And so I'd be going back to my doctor, who was a male doctor. And look, I don't have anything against male or female. However, it's a pretty common understanding in the endo community that a lot of male doctors wouldn't understand that condition. I think it's getting a little bit better now, but there's still some old school doctors out there who not only don't understand endo, but some of them don't even believe in it. I kid you not, I actually saw, and this is not uncommon, I saw a post from someone recently stating that this was a female doctor. It was an older doctor. They went to this female doctor about their pain and endo and all sorts, and they completely dismissed it, said they'd been in practice for several decades and they don't believe that endometriosis is a real condition. And that broke my heart for that poor girl. And unfortunately, that's a really common story. So anyway, I, you know, every single month was the same episode. You know, I'd have to have days off school or work when I was working, and it was just the same old thing. Every single month, you know, I knew that that was going to happen. So I would take the Ponstan and just have to write it out, stay in bed all day, you know, have your heat packs and so on. And I remember going back to my GP and, you know, saying the same thing. They didn't have any other answers for me. And to be honest, I don't blame them, because it doesn't really, it's not their fault. It's the way they're taught. And so I'll never forget the comment that this GP made once when I was probably 15 or 16. And he truly did say, you know, remember, you are a woman, you do have to go through period pain. And back then, that is what was accepted. It's accepted as the norm that to be a woman and have periods, you will probably get period pain, or if you do, it's normal, which is completely untrue. Let me just put that out there right now, that is absolutely bullshit, and something that I'm really, really passionate about helping other women see. So I guess I just wrote that out for several years. I mean, I just turned 29. So, and like I said, I got my periods when I was 11. So, you know, that's almost 30 years ago. Anyway, almost 20 years ago. So I was
just continuing on with the same old, just, you know, pain all the time, just dealing with it. That's me. That's normal. But there were certainly some episodes where it was worse than usual. And I would be literally on the floor on, like, you know, on all fours, howling and screaming in pain. It was that horrendous. And, you know, there'll be times when it would often hit at like 2 a.m. in the morning. So I'd never sleep that night. And, you know, when I was living with mum and dad, you know, they witnessed it, you know, every single month as well. And, you know, speaking to mum about whether she had it, because it's endo is very familial, so it runs in families. And she said that she didn't have it, and she was a nurse, so, and she also worked with surgeons who would diagnose endo. So she was across the board. But she did say once she said she had had period pain growing up, not as bad as mine, but she did remember getting bad period pain. And she also said later on in life, she had had minor surgery, and there were some adhesions found on her bowel that were loosened up. Now, there are a few different reasons for adhesions, but we do know that endo can spread to the bowel and cause adhesions. So mum and I have both speculated, you know, later on in life, whether or not that was endo, because now the diagnostic criteria is certainly expanded, and there are many surgeons who are now more experience in diagnosing endo, whereas someone who's not as experienced would completely miss it or think that it's something else. So I do wonder now whether mum did have endo herself. So some other things that I tried throughout my teenage years was obviously going on the pill. That's the classic that every woman just about is put on in their teenage years for all sorts of different conditions. So for me, not only was the period pain a factor for me wanting to go on the pill, and also because I was sexually active by the time I was like 15 or 16, and, you know, secretly I also wanted to be on the pill for that as well. But with not only did I have period pain, I was also getting a little bit of acne on the side of my head. And of course, they say that the pill is good for clearing that up as well. So I went on the pill. I think I was 15 when I went on the pill. And pretty much instantly, I started to gain weight. Like I feel like I gained weight, like 5 kilos in a month. And for a teenager who was always, you know, very tall and slim, and next thing you know, I'm gaining weight. I was getting cellulite all up my legs. I will never, ever forget that moment when I was in the change room. I think I might have been Supre back then. And I was trying on a skirt or shorts. And I looked in the mirror and for the first time, I saw all this cellulite up my legs. And being a 15-year-old girl, that was mortifying to me. And my looks were so important to me. And you know, that really broke me then. And to be honest, you know, now knowing what I know, and I've had to work on so much self-love, you know, in the last few years, and I love my body for how it is now, you know, cellulite and all. But back then that was really hard for me to overcome. And the pill also was making me, you know, moody, up and down. And I quickly realized that the pill probably isn't going to work for me. Now, again, naturopathic reflection here. I mean, where do I even start with the pill? If you scroll back through some posts, I think on my Instagram, you'll probably find my very heavy opinion on it. But for those who are estrogen dominant and then to go on and the pill can be one of the worst things. And not only that, we do know now as well that estrogen receptors don't fully develop until, you know, your early 20s. So if you're going on the pill before that they are fully developed, you can be stunting their development, which can affect your conditions. And it's similar, I like to explain, it's very similar to the way that, you know, how they say your brain's not fully developed until, you know, 18 to early 20s, and you know, teenagers are drinking alcohol. I know I certainly drank a lot of alcohol in my teenage years, as well as drugs as well. And, you know, they say if you do that before your brain's fully developed, you can cause permanent, you know, slight damage and that kind of thing. So that's kind of how I relate that. So I came off the pill. I think I went on and off the pill quite a few times. You know, when I got in a relationship with someone, I'd go back on it and I always felt terrible. So the other thing that I experienced a lot in high school was PMS, being very teary and irritable. And I'm a big savory tooth, but it was always that one time of the month where I would crave chocolate. And I still remember Twix pods were my absolute go-to whenever I had my period. And I still remember getting angry until I had them in my hands. Like, it was actual anger. And if someone didn't take me to the shops to get them, or someone didn't go and get them for me, I was just like a demon, which reflecting on now is just crazy because that's not me at all now. But yeah, just those Twix pods were my absolute go-to. So once again, PMS, chocolate cravings, they're all sure signs that there is serious problems going on with your hormones, and that isn't normal. So some other symptoms that I also experienced as well was a lot of clotting. And this is a classic one in endometriosis, as well as fibroids and adenomyosis. So this is where you literally do see these clots of blood when you're having your period. And for some people, they may just have a couple. For me, my period just was several clots. And sometimes it would be anything from like 5 cent pieces to like, you know, 3 50-cent pieces. Like, there was a lot of clots going on there, and that is a sure sign that there is a lot of shedding of the lining, and that's causing a lot of pain as well, trying to get rid of all that proliferation. And it's also quite often a really dark red blood as well, which is also a big sign that your hormones are out of whack and your periods just aren't working the way that they should. So, you know, moving on to a little bit of, you know, as I got on, I started to read online about period pain, and I'm just thinking, this cannot be normal. There's no way that this is normal. And I started to read a little bit about endometriosis. And I think it was even my mum had suspected it as well. She was like, you know, maybe it could be endo. And, you know, that's when I got on Dr. Google. I think I was probably like maybe 17 when I first started to consider endo. And I actually remember I read online about how it can be linked with infertility. And this is honestly one of the worst things on for Dr. Google is infertility. And at 17 years old, I just started bawling my eyes out thinking, oh my God, I might not be able to have kids. And of course, again, not knowing all the things I know now about what we can do to support your fertility, even when so many women are told that they are infertile or they can't have children, when in fact that's not the case at all. The person diagnosing them doesn't understand the condition and the way it works. I will never forget, I had this really nice male friend at that time, and I had messaged him saying, I'm really struggling. And I still remember him coming around and just, I was in my room bawling my eyes out, and he gave me the biggest hug, and I remember him talking it out with me. I'll never forget that moment. You know, and also my cousin, she has really bad endometriosis, and that did actually end up affecting her fertility to the point where she did have to have IVF, but she's been able to have two beautiful boys, which is just, you know, so awesome to see. And if I'm being honest, you know, that's something that always keeps me positive, because you know, she went through so, so much with her endo. Like it really was a shambles in there by the sounds of things, with the surgery and, you know, even though sometimes we may not be able to fall pregnant the usual penis in vagina way, I don't want to say natural way, because what is even natural, you know? But there are often other ways. And so that's, you know, that always gives me hope. So I, you know, knowing that my cousin had it, my mum potentially had it, it was starting to, you know, paint that picture for me that I think, you know, that's sounding like a diagnosis for me. So I was 20 years old. One day I was having a really, really bad period pain flare, I guess you could say. And I'll never forget it. I'll remember exactly where I was. You know, I was living at home and I was just writhing on the floor. Like I was screaming in agony to the point I was just like, I'm going to die. Like this is just the worst pain in the world. And mum was there and she was helpless. You know, she didn't really know what else she could do. And she was like, you know, I think, do you want me to call an ambulance, Jade? Because I don't know what else we can do. Like this is, like I was just literally on all fours, just crying and screaming because it was so painful. So I was like, yes, call an ambulance, because I just needed someone to give me some instant pain relief. But of course, you know, ambulance don't always get there straight away, because it's everything's triage based on priority basis. And I totally understand that, because I work in emergency services as well. And by the time they got there, the painkillers that I'd taken finally kicked in, and there's not really much they could do. But that was the first experience of, you know, implementing an outsider for such excruciating pain, which I'm going to tell you a couple more stories about very soon. But it was at that point that mum said to me, this is not good enough. You need to get investigations done, because this is your body. You should be able to demand to get answers. And I totally agreed. So I went back to the doctor and I said, I want to be investigated for endometriosis. I want to see a gynecologist. And so this is when I was 21 by this stage. And it's funny, because that year I'd also had a knee reconstruction and I was just about to go in for some more surgery, literally a few months later. So first of all, my male doctor was reluctant and he was just kind of playing it down and kind of, again, just saying, you know, like it is kind of normal to have period pain and so on. I was like, I don't care. I've been going through this for so long now. This is my body. I want answers. So he wrote me the referral. So went to the gynecologist, was feeling hopeful that they should understand. And even she made me feel like shit. And she kind of looked down at me a little bit. She was suggesting that probably isn't endo, even if it is, if we do a laparoscopy and we try and remove it, it can affect your fertility. And now, knowing what I know now, back then, so they were talking about ablation, and there are two main techniques to remove endo, ablation and excision. And we definitely know hands down that ablation is the worst of the two that you can get. And yes, it has been linked with infertility, but also the endo growing back. But I didn't know that back then. I thought that was the only form, you know, and clearly they weren't very well trained in it either. And she was really reluctant. She didn't want to do it. And I was like, I don't care. I want this surgery. I'm sick of this pain. So she's like, right, okay, we'll do it then. And I had the laparoscopy, and I'll never forget waking up just in so much pain, crying. It was awful. And there was a lot of blood as well. Whereas the laparoscopy I recently had, there was not a lot of blood at all. And woke up hoping for some news, and they said everything looked normal. Sorry to interrupt. I promise we'll get back to it in just a minute, but I just wanted to tell you something that I think you're going to love, particularly if you're already really enjoying this podcast. So in May this year, I'm holding a 2-day Healthy Hormones Weekend Retreat in Torquay, Victoria. You'll join 10 other like-minded women to learn all about how to harness the power of your hormones for good and how to reverse all those problems such as PMS, period pain, PCOS, endometriosis, and everything else that seems to be troublesome for women that shouldn't be normal. So in this retreat, you're going to have several healthy hormone workshops where I take you from start to finish, from understanding your hormones all the way to what foods and herbs and lifestyle measures can help to reverse the problems that you're currently experiencing. The weekend will also include meditations, healthy hormone loving foods. You'll also get a free goodie bag at the end and so much more. Even better, because it's in Torquay and it's at our own private residence, it's a stone's throw away from the beach. And given that I have scheduled in free time, you'll be able to get your feet onto that beautiful sand and go and enjoy some time by the beach. Or there is a fireplace, and if it's cold enough, I'm sure we'll definitely be lighting that up so that we can have a girly time around the fire with some hot Adaptamine, which is my brand new superfood hot chocolate, and so much more. And if that's not enough to encourage you, I just wanted to share with you this amazing review from one of the girls who's attended one of my retreats before. This is from Tamara Heckel, who says, "What an amazing weekend of bliss, self-development and connecting, not only with my inner self, but all the beautiful people on this retreat. 2 nights away felt like a whole week. I left this retreat feeling supercharged, safe, ready to face my new personal goals and try out some of the delicious recipes that Jade taught us. If you're looking for a stress-free weekend to work on yourself, then I highly recommend one of Jade's retreats. Absolutely everything is sort of, all you have to do is turn up with your open mind." Honestly, that sums it up to a T. Everyone that comes on one of my retreats always walks away with so much information, feeling empowered, motivated, and inspired to live a much healthier life. And as she pointed out, 2 days really does feel like a week when you are just doing all this incredible work. So if you want to find out more, head over to jadewalker.com.au. All the information is there. We've got one single shared room left, which is a really affordable option. And we've also got 2 queen private bedrooms left as well. So you can share it with a friend or have it all to yourself. But hurry, the early bird price does end at the end of February. So make sure you snap that up. Payment plans also available. I cannot wait to see you there. Normal, you don't have endometriosis. They did do a little procedure where they dilate the os, which has been known to help some women with period pain. I believe it's meant to slightly imitate the what occurs with pregnancy, because a lot of women will say once they have had a baby, they notice significantly reduced period pains. Now, there's a couple of different reasons for that. It's got to do with also a bit of a hormonal reset as well. But this dilating of the os is meant to somewhat help. Now, that didn't do shit for me. And also, I was feeling rather deflated because even though it seems like, great, good news, you don't have endo, I was like, well, what the fuck is it then? Because I am clearly in a lot of pain and that is not normal. So being, you know, that was when I was 21 years old, and that truly set me up on a path of being defeated for several years because the pain never stopped. And if anything, it got worse. And I just felt like, well, what's the point investigating again? You know, they're not going to find anything. And, you know, I felt quite lost about it for a really long time. And really just, you know, you do start questioning, is it in my head? Do I have a really shit pain threshold? And people do start telling you that as well. Like, I think you've just got a really low pain threshold, or, you know, they give you all these other reasons. And that was really hard to accept, but I kind of did just have to accept that that was my normal, I suppose. So it really wasn't until starting my degree in health science as a naturopath that I, you know, secretly in my mind, I was always hoping that that was going to find me the answers that I wanted. And even though that's not the reason why I became a naturopath, in many ways, I almost feel like maybe that was the reason I was supposed to do it. And so I started to understand in my degree that whenever we would talk about women's hormones, how abnormal period pain is and that it should never, ever be normal. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to reopen this. And it always came back to endometriosis. There's primary dysmenorrhea and secondary dysmenorrhea, and dysmenorrhea means period pain. So if I ever use the term dysmenorrhea, it's just me going back into practitioner mode, and that means period pain. So primary dysmenorrhea is where it's linked with an actual problem such as endometriosis. And then you've got secondary dysmenorrhea. Oh, sorry, I think it's the other way around. Sorry. Primary is just period pain due to, you know, high prostaglandins, inflammation, poor liver detoxification, all that kind of thing. And then you've got secondary, which is from a condition. So I was just thinking maybe I've just got really poor liver detoxification. My hormones are causing me to get all this pain, but it's not from endo, because this is a big one that we looked at when treating or when supporting a woman with period pain was working through the liver. Now, the thing is, though, is that is still the point of action when you're working on period pain with endo, but there's more to it than that. But women with endo do have poor liver detoxification because your liver is what metabolizes out estrogen. So quite often we have poor phase one and phase two liver detoxification pathways. And so that's where herbs and nutrients come in to help to support those and deal with that overwhelming burden of those excess hormones that aren't getting out. And what we do also know is that estrogen drives up prostaglandins, and prostaglandin 2 is your main one associated with pain. And we know that this is a huge sign in endo, that they've found that women with endo have higher amounts of this PGE2 or prostaglandin 2 found in the endometrium. So, or the, you know, the whole pelvic area. So that is a big target for us when we're helping women with the period pain. So as I was learning about all these new things and new terms and things to look at, I was honestly questioning every single lecture I had if there was something new that I didn't yet know that I should be trying. Because again, every lecturer was saying it's not normal to have that much pain. And they would always say, do you have endo? And I'd say, oh, well, I had a laparoscopy when I was 21 and they said I didn't have it. Most of them were like, okay, then it sounds like poor liver detoxification and dietary factors. Diet plays a huge, huge role in reducing inflammation. But at that time I was vegan, and even though I don't promote vegan diets, you know, if you are plant-based, great. I'll always support my clients with plant-based diets, but I don't encourage, if someone is not plant-based now and they've read something that says it's the best thing for them, I do not encourage them doing it. That may be another podcast for another day. But I was vegan at the time, and they do say that a vegan diet has been shown to reduce period pain. And that's not anything to do with just, you know, it's vegan or nothing. It's more because you're reducing a lot of the inflammatory foods and replacing it with lots and lots of good plant matter. And we do know that, you know, a plant-based diet doesn't necessarily have to mean completely vegan. I think that term's being kind of used interchangeably at the moment. But, you know, a plant-based diet that still has room for meats and fish and that kind of thing is amazing, because it increases all those anti-inflammatory compounds and antioxidants and reduces the amount of inflammatory foods, which I am going to talk about later on. And so, you know, diet wasn't really a factor for me, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, that could be the reason why I've got a lot of inflammation and pain. Not to mention that kind of pain, like 10 out of 10 pain, in my opinion, from what I've seen in all my endo clients now, like that, it can't really be controlled by diet alone, in my opinion. So I kept asking around, trying to find out, you know, what was going on. And then I started to learn that the endo could have actually been missed. And I had heard from some people that it's really, really important that you see a surgeon who actually specializes in endo. Now, the term that I've later come to learn only within the last few months is what's called an advanced trained excision surgeon in endometriosis. There's no shorter way to say it, unfortunately, but these surgeons have actually done several extra years of training in identifying different types of endo and also correctly removing it. And this is a huge one that makes a massive, massive difference to the outcome of women's treatment and their prevention of it growing back. It helps better with their symptoms, chances of fertility, and also, of course, identifying it. And that is certainly in my case where my endo was missed. And if someone with a proper trained eye had actually gone in there, they would have found it. So I started learning about this, but then the next barrier that I was coming up against was that pretty much everyone was saying you can only access them in private health sector. And that was another brick wall for me, because I didn't have private health and I wasn't certainly going to go out and get it either, because one, I was a uni student on, you know, earning sweet fuck all. And secondly, I never really felt the need to have private until you're, is it 31, when that Medicare levy starts coming in. So I didn't see the value in it whatsoever. Anyway, and I just felt like that was a brick wall for me, because I was like, well, I can't afford to fork out $10,000 for that private surgeon, and I can't afford private health either. So I was just like, okay, where do I go from here? And, you know, along that time, I was still facing all the same symptoms, but I started to get more symptoms as well. So, you know, being in a long-term relationship at this point with my husband, my now husband, I was starting to notice more painful sex. And this is a really classic sign of endo as well. It was a very deep pain, and it would be better or worse at certain times of my cycle. So when I say cycle, that's your, you know, quote unquote 28-day cycle. For some women, it's slightly less or slightly more. And when I mentioned that to my GP, and I mentioned it to a few different types of GPs, they would all just say, oh yeah, you know, that can be normal when your pelvis tilts with, you know, at different times of the cycle. And again, they just were not hearing me, because, you know, sometimes that pain was awful to the point where I was on edge. Like I would just be like, oh, I don't even want to do this. And I think some women will relate that, you know, you do kind of feel bad that you're putting a burden on the sex. And so you kind of just ride through it, and you just wince through the pain, and you try and act like everything's okay when it's absolutely not. And, you know, this is just, I've even heard that this can interfere with people's relationships, and people have had all sorts of relationship issues when it comes to their endo and their partner not understanding the pain they're going through, not understanding that they're so tired, not understanding how serious this condition is. A lot of people, when it's an invisible disease, they just don't get it. So that was a big one that started to come on for me. I also started to get the rectal pain as well. And in fact, I think I was having that for several years, and I just thought that was a normal part of getting my period. And the rectal pain is like this super sharp shooting pain up the rectum, and to the point sometimes where I couldn't even sit down because it was so uncomfortable, and it could radiate all the way up through the pelvic region, all the way maybe even to like the intestinal area. Sometimes I'd get slightly shooting pain down the vagina as well, and lower back pain too. That was a classic one that I went through life for a long time experiencing. So there were certainly all these other symptoms that started to prop up here and there. So that was also making me think, you know, I think I've been misdiagnosed, you know, so like my diagnosis went missing. So, you know, oh, another story as well along the way, I told you that I was going to mention it a couple of other times when I had to, you know, call on the emergency services. So there were two times that I've had to go to hospital for the pain because it got so bad. And the first time when I was, I'll never forget, I was about 24 or 25 years old, and my husband and I had just got engaged, and we got engaged on the Philippine Islands in Palawan, a really beautiful spot for anyone who is interested. Food isn't that great though, I must say. And we just got back, and I usually get some kind of gut problem whenever I go to Southeast Asia. Back then, before I really knew what I was doing, and my gut was an absolute mess. And I had been getting this epigastric pain ever since coming back from the Philippines. And I remember one night I woke up and this epigastric pain was getting really bad, but then I also was getting really bad period pain as well. And the period pain was getting so bad. And I got up in the middle of the night and went to the bathroom, and the term we use is flooding. There was just like so much blood. And it looked like a bit of a murder scene in the toilet. Like, it actually scared me and made me feel sick looking at it. And I just remember like coming out into the hallway, and my husband was already up because he could sense something wasn't right. And I just started crying, and I was like, I think something's wrong. Like, the pain's so bad and there's so much blood. And so he took me to the hospital, and, you know, they just gave me some painkillers. They ran some tests. They were suspecting maybe an ectopic pregnancy. But all it was just bad period pain. Interestingly enough though, the GP who analyzed me, he was a younger doctor, and he must have learned a bit more about endo, because he was actually saying, you know, it sounds like endo. I think you should get that checked out. And I was, you know, at the time I was like, yep, I know, but, you know, I keep coming up against brick walls. And but anyway, I was really, really happy to actually finally experience someone acknowledge that, you know what, I think that this could be endo. And that wasn't the first episode of having to go to hospital though. So it was probably about a year later, I had just signed up to a new yoga studio, and I was feeling really good. I had just done a detox. And now when I say the word detox, I don't just mean like your standard detox that people talk about online that probably doesn't even really do anything. This was like a proper functional liver detox to, you know, focus on hormones, focus on your gut health and so on. And that month I'd had no PMS, I'd had no bloating. It was one of those periods where I was like, oh fuck, I just got my period. And you don't even realize because you feel that good. And, you know, it started to get to a point where I had worked on my hormones and my health so much that this was pretty common for me, where no PMS, no bloating, but it was the pain that was the biggest problem. And, you know, that's also a sure sign that clearly there is something going on physically that is overriding all the good stuff that you're doing to the point where you get such bad pain. Anyway, so I was feeling that good, and knowing that this detox could potentially reduce my period pain, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to a yoga class today and just see how I go. I actually am feeling that good. And I just got my period, which was so unusual for me. I actually had energy, and dumbest thing I've ever done when it comes to my period. Do not do this at home. So not only did I go to the yoga class, it was also a hot yoga class. It wasn't like hot. It was a warm room. It was still quite warm. And on top of that, it was in the morning. I had drank some water, but naturally you're pretty dehydrated in the morning. So there's that. On top of that, I hadn't eaten yet, but I was feeling great. Anyway, I'm coming up into like my warrior pose and coming out of my downward dogs, getting super dizzy. Like I was like, oh, this isn't good. So I was like, all right, just go slow, come back into child's pose, you know, just take it easy. That's what I love about yoga. It's all about just your own journey. You don't need to compare yourself to anyone else. But I was like really feeling off. And then the pain started to kick in, and it was only mild though. And I was like, you know what? I can ride through this mild pain. It's fine. The circulation will be good for it, moving around the hot room, da, 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 da. And it was getting worse. It was getting worse. And I was like, okay, I need to leave. So I actually walked out. Like I left my yoga mat. I walked out, you know, I've just got my yoga pants and my crop top on. And I go into the bathroom, and next thing, I had really bad diarrhea. Like I was breaking out in the biggest sweat. I was dry reaching, and the pain was horrendous. Like it was just next level. And I was like, shit, what do I do? Like I was literally laying on this bathroom floor, holding the toilet bowl, basically just, you know, so alone. Everyone's in the yoga class, so luckily no one needed the toilet, because it wouldn't have been a pretty place to come in. And I laid there for probably about 20 minutes in absolute agony, sweating. And I was like, what am I going to do? Do I call an ambulance or do I drive myself there? And basically that 20 minutes I was there, I spent that time getting up enough courage and energy to get my things and leave and drive to the hospital. And that was hard enough in itself. And upon reflection, I absolutely should have called an ambulance. But in my mind, I was like, shit, I can't remember if I've got ambulance cover still or not. Has it lapsed? And I was like, I don't want to get a big bill. So I, you know, walked down the stairs, because every good yoga studio seems to be up a big flight of stairs these days. I walked down Chapel Street with my crop top on, sweating, like face red, walking past all the people having their brunch, and just made a beeline for my car. Fortunately, the hospital was just around the corner, but it felt like the longest drive of my life. And I was like, just could barely even look at the road. It was dangerous for me to drive on reflection. And I was just like, just get yourself to the hospital. So I get myself to the hospital, and there's like no parks, and I had to just park in a no parking zone right out the front, and I couldn't even get out of the car. I was in that much pain. And I was just
coming up in part two, you'll find out what happened next and the other hurdles that I faced along the way until I finally reached that diagnosis of endometriosis. If you found this episode inspiring, or you think it could help someone else, please share it with everyone you know and love. Tag me on Instagram. I always reshare stories. And of course, if you haven't already, please leave me a 5-star review and hit subscribe, as that's what helps to motivate me to keep going, because I know that this is something you love. Of course, you can also join me in the Facebook community group where we discuss all things natural health. I hope to see you in there. Until next time, bye for now.